I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Are you a good tipper? I am, because I worked as a waitress through college, and I know how hard it is to give good service. Even the best server can't always control what goes on in the kitchen, although being friendly and helpful can go a long way to making the dining experience a good one. There's a growing trend among restaurants to get rid of the gratuity because diners can be unreliable when it comes to the tip and it can create a financial divide between the front and the back of the house. Today on Radio Times, we want to explore the pros and cons of tipping in restaurants, and we have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Avram Hornick is the owner of FCM Hospitality, and that includes William Street Common at 39th and Chestnut Street in West Philadelphia. They instituted a no-tipping policy, pays all the employees $15 an hour. He also owns Morgan's Pier, Drinker's Pub, Drinker's Tavern, Ortlieb's Lounge, and Dolphin Tavern. And Avram Hornick, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us, Paul O'Neill. He's director of special projects at Drexel University Center for Hospitality. He has over 20 years of restaurant experience in the back and the front of the house, most recently at the Vetri family of restaurants. And Paul O'Neill, nice to have you with us on Radio Times
as
well.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Nice to have you both here. And Avram, let me begin with you. You changed this policy at your restaurant in West Philadelphia. Why did you change it?
So I own that location. It was a previous concept. The concept wasn't really working. So it was a more of a college bar concept. And we were working on the pop-up beer gardens. I did the first one for PHS and Morgan's Pier, which are kind of a different service model. So we had a very large space. And the idea was for people to come and spend a long period of time there. They might come
hang out,
you know, a third place, you know, a common room. And as a result, the tables may or may not turn. And we wanted to remove the pressure on people to leave. But that wouldn't be fair to our staff, because as a tipped or commissioned employee, you need to move the tables along to make money. So we really, that was kind of the thought about, well, what do we do about that? And that's how it led us to develop this non-tipping policy.
Is it too soon to say? Is it working? I mean, what's the criteria, I guess, for working? And then I'll get you in on the conversation, Paul.
In some ways it is, in some ways it isn't. I can talk more about that. But it's a lot more than just about the non-tipping. It's an operational concept, which takes a lot of work to develop to make it work. So it's only been under a year, and so we're in the process of working it to make it work right.
And I do want to pick up on that. Paul, are we talking – would you say it's a small trend? I mean, there are some interesting and pretty well-known restaurants who are beginning to rethink and even change their tipping policy. But are we seeing people galloping to deal with this in the restaurant business?
I think having somebody like Danny Meyer coming out this week
in New York,
it spiked the conversation and it became more of a reality. You know, last year we had Gerard, which had opened up.
In Philadelphia.
Exactly. And that was something that, you know, started the conversation here in Philadelphia and to the point where they've almost become the no-tipping restaurant. And that's become their MO. And it is being discussed more and more. There's, you know, it's something that business owners have discussed with their staff as well. Do you want to make this more of a profession? Or is this more of the, you know, you're just here to make some money while you're like yourself in college, like myself when you're in college? Or is this something that you have a true passion for and consider to be your profession? But I definitely see it's becoming more of a trend.
And I guess by profession, if you're paying $15 an hour, that's about $40,000 a year. I mean, that's, you're not getting rich, but it's a pretty okay income.
Absolutely. You know, I was saying to Avram before, oftentimes, you know, servers are often asked the question, so what do you really do?
Oh,
well,
really?
Where? When? And that's oftentimes it's, well, you know, in real life, what do you do? You know, because it's not a make-believe profession. It's a job. And so it's interesting that stigma is still attached to it, where there are some, I've worked with some of the hardest working people and people who really, truly are passionate about it. And it's a great profession. So
I was reading about, you know, who gets, broadly speaking, they've done some research about who gets a good tip and who doesn't. And it seems that if you are a white, blonde, thin female, chances are you're getting among the best tips. If you're an African-American woman, apparently you're lower down on that hierarchy. Is trying to sort of get the tip out of the transaction a way to address perhaps a sort of latent prejudice that people might have about who's waiting on them?
Well, first, I think we have to look at the available data on tipping. So a lot of it is aggregate. In reality, there's a lot of different types of restaurants and a lot of different type of experiences. You know, Paul and I, you know, work in a city center where there's a great dining scene, a lot of great servers, a lot of great cooks, and most importantly, a lot of great customers who want to come in.
And this is Philadelphia.
This is Philadelphia. And so, you know, we're having, you know, people who want to spend, you know, $20, $30, $40, $50, $60, $70 a person for meals, while most of the people who are living off of tips don't have that amount of money that they're making. So they are living in rural areas or suburban areas where there's not the number of competition and the number of restaurants where they can actually work.
So they might be working in a deli or a fast food place or, I mean, someplace that isn't more high-end.
More high-end. And they might be working closer to the minimum wage than, like, our staffs may, which is really a question of professionalism and dividing the pie amongst the front of the house and the back of the house and legal compliance issues versus income inequality issues. So I think it's important to distinguish that the different types and in a given restaurant, the people who are have less education, who are living closer to the poverty line, minorities might be working in restaurants which are at the lower end. And as they're working essentially on commission, the less busy the restaurant, the less the check average, the less money they're going to make. It doesn't mean they're working less harder. It's just they're making less money. So I think within an individual restaurant, I don't know if those prejudices really apply. But certainly if you look at the data overall, all the 3 million people who are working as tipped employees out there, that's certainly going to be true.
Well, Paul, what do you think people, diners, what do you think their criteria is for good service?
You know, we were having the discussion before about, you know, the pendulum shift or the pendulum swing of the fine dining culture in and of itself, where, you know, it was thought of more or less in the 80s and the 90s to be somewhat of an element of exclusivity, where keeping the others out. And casual restaurants have, within the past 10 years, have upped their game. So people want comfort at the end of the day. They want to go out. They don't want to think about any of their troubles of their day. And that's really what the shift of hospitality in an ocean. You know, it's funny going back to what Danny Meyer is saying. He says hospitality included, not service included. Mm-hmm. So it's a focus more on the guest. It's a focus more on the dialogue with the guest and how you're going to create that that culture that we're here for you, to the point where restaurants have even instituted the policy of not introducing yourself to the table, because it's not about you. It's about the guest's experience at the end of the day. So restaurants have become more of that culture. They've gone along with that aspect of it.
For tipped workers, people might not know this. I think nationally speaking, it's $2.13 an hour. In Pennsylvania, it's $2.83 an hour. I believe I have that right, Paul.
Correct.
So just so people understand that if you're tipping or not tipping someone, chances are in a tipped restaurant they're making in Pennsylvania $2.83 an hour.
When you look at your check,
right.
Which can be shocking. You look at that number and you think, well, I don't know what's going to happen there. And, you know, there is, of course, Avram and I were talking about the notion of tip credit, to where it's they have a formula that is worked out to make sure that you are making a certain – that you have to make the minimum wage, and that's along with the Federal Labor Standards Act. And so it's interesting how the formula is worked out. But at the end of the day, I mean, is it guaranteed?
Yeah.
And that's difficult to say.
And, Avram, you were talking about the front and the back of the house, and I think people not familiar with – the restaurant business might not know exactly what that means, what happens in the front. I mean, the back of the house is the kitchen. Mm-hmm. But the kind of disparity, I guess, between these two worlds?
Yeah, so the federal law and also each individual state law requires that each employee receive the minimum wage, which, you know, $7.25 federally, and then each state has a different one. You know, Washington, D.C., it's $9.50 an hour. So it really just depends on where you are. So the federal government, the Department of Labor, allows an exception for people who earn tips. They go to the restaurant owner and say, you only have to pay them this bit of money. But if they don't make that other bit of money, that in Pennsylvania would be $4.42 an hour in tips, you have to make that up to make sure they make the minimum wage. Now, what happens is when you tip a server or your bartender, they often have to tip out the other service employees, the barbacks, the runners, the bussers.
So the tippers are tipping the other people that are part of that chain.
Right. So it might be 15 to 30% of the money you're giving them that go to other people. Mm-hmm. So the Department of Labor has rules which says that you only are allowed to give tips through a valid tip pool to people who are traditional tipped employees, or the chain of service, they call it. Until recently, when the Ninth Circuit in California overturned the Department of Labor regulations, which said, no, that's not true. If you opt out of taking the tip credit, in other words, if you just pay all your employees minimum wage, then you do not have to limit the sharing of the tips to the front of the house employees. You can also share them with the back of the house. With
the people washing dishes.
And recently there was another court case which said this even includes the management. They're still under appeal. They haven't been decided. But that's true in California. That's because all those states eliminated the minimum wage. So that restaurants have to pay the full minimum wage even for servers and bartenders. So as a result, they now are using that the tips for everyone.
And it's also important to note the fact that minimum wage has, you know, this has been a conversation as well, of course, with fast food workers. And you're talking about, you know, out west, they have, you know, some of the places such as San Francisco and Seattle, they're paying up to $15 for minimum wage. Recently, there was a restaurant in Seattle that instituted that policy.
Some fast food workers protesting for that.
Absolutely. New York, by 2018, the minimum wage for all workers will be $15. Target and Walmart, their minimum wage is $9 now. So that conversation has already been started about minimum wage in and of itself. So, of course, it was only natural that it starts the conversation. Well, what about tipped workers? And where do they fall? Where do they fall into this? And
it's important, you know, it has to do with the Department of Labor and the IRS are kind of at odds at this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So the IRS wants to make sure that they collect as much money from people so they consider tipped income to be income. And then the Department of Labor but the IRS, the rule is that it's the server or bartender's responsibility to report their tips, not the restaurant. The restaurant is not allowed to report the tips for the server or they are required to do it. The restaurant's not allowed to do it for them. But the Department of Labor says you have to pay minimum wage to all your employees, including your indirectly tip people. So that if the servers are tipping out the bussers or the runners, the barbacks, and especially when your minimum wage starts to rise up, and I think that's probably why New York is getting that pressure, because now the $15 an hour that they have to pay to their indirectly tipped employees, well, they have to make sure that someone's declaring that.
Well, we have to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about tipping in restaurants and we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And is it time to give up tipping in restaurants? And if not that, what's a better alternative? Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about tipping because a very high-profile restaurateur in New York is talking about abandoning tipping, and it's certainly happening here in Philadelphia. It's happened in other cities as well. Choosing to pay their workers a higher wage. There are questions about what happens to the menu prices. Do they increase in order to compensate for the lack of tipping, and what happens to customer service? Talking with Paul O'Neill, he's director of special projects at Drexel University's Center for Hospitality. Avram Hornick is owner of FCM Hospitality here in Philadelphia, and among his restaurants, William Street Common in West Philadelphia has instituted a no tipping policy about a year ago, paying all employees $15 an hour. And we want to hear from you about how you decide what's a good tip or not, and do you think it's time to get rid of the gratuity? And you can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Paul, before going on the air, I was reminiscing from my waitress days, and you know, it's not like it was the dinosaur age, but people used credit cards less. It was more like a cash transaction, and if you were a server back then, you could go home with some cash in your back pocket. How much is that true today, or is everything by credit card? So there's more of a paper trail.
Yeah, I would definitely say it's the majority is credit card. And, of course, you also have to factor in gift cards into the equation as well. So you have gift cards and, you know, the check will come to $80 and it's a $100 gift card. They'll say, oh, just, you know, keep it. So there's definitely less cash. And it's made it easier for the, you know, we were speaking about it before about, you know, cash. There was a system of trust that was shaky at best when it came to cash.
When there's
tips.
Cash. So what happens once it gets?
Most definitely. For a business owner, it's very difficult to keep a hand on that. But, you know, it's become much more, I would say, you're able to track the data better.
Avram, let me go back to you. And, you know, a good tip, I guess, is 20%. I think of that. If a 20% tip means that you got good service and the food was good and you enjoyed yourself. Looking at William Street Common, have you had to raise your prices in order to sort of offset the tipping situation?
So William Street is not a full service model. So that we were getting some pushback when we had the 20%. Service charge,
right.
Because they're like, well, what am I getting service for? So we changed it and we started to call it a 20% fair wage surcharge, which we got a lot more positive response for. And the way we kind of described it is kind of like dolphin free tuna, you know, that you're paying a little bit more money, but, you know, you're feeling better because, yeah, I'm paying 50 cents more, but I know that everyone who's working here is getting a fair wage. And so we've had a lot of positive response to that idea, which is, and you know, what you were saying, it's making the pie bigger rather than trying to divide the slices up differently.
And is this a branding issue, Paul? I mean, the idea is that restaurants can use this to say, hey, look how I'm taking care of my employees.
Most of, I mean, you know, there's that case. There's that component to it. There's also other restaurants that just include it because that's their policy. You know, per se, when they opened in 2005, they instituted the 20%. Mm-hmm. What they're doing differently from a lot of some of the other restaurants is they're leaving the tip line there as an extra added bonus. So if people really do feel like they've gone above and beyond and their service was impeccable, you know, they have the option to tip more. So allowing for more autonomy on the customer's part.
Right.
I think that's some of the pushback from the customer is that they feel as if that's being taken away from, that autonomous notion of, you know, I'm not allowed to tip what I want to tip.
But what happens in a tipping restaurant is that then the customer ends up paying the server as opposed to the person that owns the restaurant.
Which is the whole tipping model. You know, I think something happened when tipping used to be a gift, right? And a gift that wasn't taxed. And and I think it was with the Fair Labor Law in 66, they essentially, okay, we're going to set the minimum wage at this, but 50% of that is for tipped employees. So they created an exception for tipped employees. And I think at that point, it kind of transformed tips from a gratuity or a gift into wages. And I think that worked for a lot of years, and I don't think there would be any need to change it but for this increase in credit cards, online payment, the paying with your card. And then also it inhibits restaurateurs and hospitality people's ability to innovate with different business models, which might be successful because you can't if the servers are depending on their 20% commission, then maybe you want more managers or maybe you want less servers or more counter servers, or there's lots of different ways you could organize your business, but you can't because you're just depending on this income coming in.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. We have a tweet from Nate who says, how do you incentivize good service when you're removing tipping from the equation? I'll toss this first to you, Paul. And of course, that's kind of at the heart of this question.
Most
right?
definitely. This is what people bring up most of the time. And once again, talking about the autonomy of the customer in and of itself. At the end of the day, it's a culture of good hospitality. That's what the restaurant needs to develop from the management down. You need to instill the pride. And I think there's a lot of, you know, when it comes from the moment that they step in and drop off their resume, the interview, all the way down, and your practices, your protocol, how you treat your staff, you know, that you need to have that pride. And you need to have the passion at the end of the day. You have to hire folks who truly want to do this and not, you know, somebody who has dropped off, you know, 30 other resumes because they need, you know, quick money for the 6 months that they're here.
You're looking for someone who thinks of this as a profession.
It's human capital at the end of the day. You want to make sure that you're breeding, that you have these people within your system, and only make your foundation stronger. And then these are people, of course, with the mobility that can move up to management and so on and so forth.
Do you think this would mean? I mean, if we as a country got rid of tipping, would it mean that you would hire differently?
I think it would be a mistake to get rid of tipping. I think that you know, I've been working in the business for over 20 years, and some of the hardest working, most qualified, passionate people work in the restaurant business, and they earn every dollar that they get, if not more. Mm-hmm. And so the lovely thing about the tipping structure is it kind of creates a partnership between the front of the house staff and the owner.
Right.
And they're the ones who make the restaurant. They're the ones who are there every day, and they're the ones interacting with the customer. So, like, they are the most important people in the entire restaurant and deserve to
more
be...
More important than the line chef?
That's a good question.
The person making the food?
I think the food's essential.
I'm not stepping in that one.
but for example, at a bar...
Right.
You know, it's the same craft brew keg that you're getting everywhere else. If you go to any bar in Philadelphia, they're going to have the same product mix pretty much. So what makes the difference is the decor, the location. But really, it's the staff over the long run who are going to make the difference. Now, certainly, nothing is going to save bad food or
it's
not great
blurt.
Food.
Even the friendliest server,
the friendliest server. But those front of the house people is what makes it. But and because they're incentivized as – if you don't do well, they're not going to do well. They kind of create like a third estate. You know, they kind of create a balance between the patron and the owner. And they're like canaries in the coal mine. They're always going to be concerned and tuned in and know what's going on. And if you eliminate that, you may not have that.
You want to speak to that, Paul? Then we'll get a third guest in on the conversation.
No, I think that's a great point. You know, bad food is like a blurry picture. And you can't necessarily – you can only Photoshop it so much at the end of the day. But, you know, I do agree with the sense that it is about great service. And I would rather – most people, I would say, as a whole, would rather go back to a restaurant with, you know, decent food, but impeccable service, where they felt great, where they were most comfortable, as opposed to having a place where it's amazing food, it's out of this world, and the service is cold and sterile and not welcoming.
I don't think it's possible over the long run to have a place with great food and bad service. Mm-hmm. It's just because the front of the house people are the ones who create the feedback loop, right? Mm-hmm. So like they're the ones who are going to tell you what's wrong and kind of help you fix it. And you're going to lose good people.
Absolutely.
Because they're going to say, well, this food isn't any good. My customers aren't happy. I'm going to the next restaurant.
Well, let me get our third guest in on the conversation. His name is Pascal Emmanuel Gourbi, and he's a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and a columnist at The Week. And we saw a column that he wrote very recently, the title being "Tipping is Awesome. Trust me, I'm French." And Pascal Emmanuel Gourbi, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
So
thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And we've been talking with our guests here, one of whom does own some restaurants here in Philadelphia. At one of them, he decided to institute a no-tipping policy, paying all his employees $15 an hour. Our other guest has spent a fair amount of time in the restaurant business and now is a professor, director, I should say, of special projects at Drexel University Center for Hospitality. Are you worried that in America, as you see more restaurants beginning to give up the tip, that we will be like France?
Yeah, I mean, as I was listening in, I heard one of the guests say, well, it's just impossible to imagine a restaurant with great food surviving if it doesn't have good service. Well, welcome to France. Like, we have some restaurants with really amazing food. We have very few restaurants with good service. And, you know, that was the point of my column. Like, whenever I travel to the United States, I feel like I'm on the planet because the people are nice, the waiters are nice, and it's very friendly, and all the rest, and it's sustained by the tipping culture. And France is well known internationally for its great food, but it's also well known internationally for its terrible service, and that's because of the culture we have, where waiters are paid a flat fee, there's no tipping, and so there's no incentive to have good service.
Well,
and it's really like two different planets. And so when I read Americans talking about how we should get rid of tipping for X or Y or Z reason. I'm like, no, you're destroying one of the things that makes your country so great. Well, stop doing that.
Don't take this the wrong way, but maybe Americans are just nicer than French people.
I didn't want to say it.
But do you really think that if for whatever reason tipping came back to French restaurants, do you think people in France, dining in France, would get better service?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not just I got some of that pushback on Twitter.
I mean,
culture obviously plays some role. Like some people spoke about Japan, where there's no tipping and the service is exceptional. But there's like it's. Japan is a unique culture, and culture does play a role. But if you look at Israel, for example, where they also have tipping, and service is also excellent. So culture plays a role, but so do incentives. And the two are mutually self-reinforcing, right? So I do think it plays a role.
What about the diner? And I was a waitress, and I think anyone that has spent time as a server in the front of the house has had to deal with diners who are really terrible, and you can do everything under the sun to try to make them happy and give them good service, and they will not tip you a good tip. What do you do about somebody like that?
I don't know. Just grit your teeth. I mean, that's the whole point about having a culture that's organized around that. It's not just the individual restaurant. And I think the reason why some restaurants can get away with it in the U.S. and still have good service is because the entire culture has come to expect a certain level of service. And to the contrary, in France, we just don't expect good service anymore. And so nobody focuses on that. I mean, you know, some patrons are going to be horrible. Some places are going to have bad waiters. Some places are going to have bad patrons. I mean, that's life. I also had a summer job. I also waited tables. And, you know, sometimes I hated it. And, you know, there were no tips to make me want to like it.
But I wonder, and actually we were talking before you came on the air, Pascal Emmanuel Gorby, that in France it seems like it's more of a profession than it is in the United States. I don't know if you can weigh in on that as well, but let me toss that to you, and then we'll get our two guests to comment on that.
More of a profession, you mean waiting tables?
In France, that it's more of someone, instead of maybe going sort of in and out of
right.
working a restaurant, someone who really, they see that as a lifelong profession.
Right. I mean, it's you have both, right? You have it also depends on the type of establishment. Like if you go to a fine dining establishment, you will have, you know, people who, yeah, it's their vocation, it's their job. They do it for their career, but it's you also have people who just do it as a summer job or a student job or whatever. You have all of that, and you know you do have some excellent French waiters. I'm not. You know, I mean that's the problem with generalizations. You always have a counterexample. But if you look at the overall culture, there's a huge difference. And I do think tipping is a huge part of it.
Avram, do you want to weigh in at all for what we're hearing from Pascal?
I think that the idea that tips create good culture and create good theater experience it's true, but I don't know if it has to be voluntary and it has to be directly to the server. You know, and I think when most of us go out to eat, you know, we tip what we tip. If we have a bad experience, it's not the fault of the server. It's the fault of the owner, right? They didn't have enough people staffed, so that the server was hurried. The kitchen didn't have enough people, and the dishwasher wasn't clean, or our table wasn't ready on time. Why are we punishing the person who's least responsible for that? And we end up not most of us are good people. We don't punish them, so we tend to tip whatever we tip. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, giving maybe the people the option to pay 20% less of their food bill if they're not happy, that would maybe create the same incentives.
Or, and that comes out of the owner's.
The owner's money, right? Or it's a commission structure rather than saying, okay, it's 20% service charge, but the server gets a commission based on certain metrics. There's a lot of ways to achieve the same goal of attracting good people and and incentivizing people in real time for good service.
You want to weigh in on that, Pascal?
Well, I'd certainly love to see a restaurant owner try that, the idea of saying, you know, if you're not happy, you get 20% off. I think we can wait for a while to see that happen, but when it does, I'll certainly be interested in how it works. But in the meantime, I mean, it's an age-old practice, and it does seem to produce results, at least compared to the alternatives that are out there. I mean, there's just no contest that, you know, countries where you have tipping have much higher quality of service than countries where you don't.
Let me give Paul a chance to weigh in before we have to say goodbye to you. Paul, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, there are very many ways that, and this is where the creativity of the owner and the manager come into play in terms of making the guest happy without having the server penalized. You know, and this comes in a range as Avram had mentioned, there are many variables. So it comes in a range of ways, whether it be taking a certain item off of the bill or complimenting the guests with some sort of, whether it be extra dessert or extra dish or some sort of measure of hospitality in that respect. Therefore, they're protecting their server at the end of the day. And that's what I think overall, you know, you have to – they have to make sure that that their front of house staff, that their back of house staff, everybody is protected. So if you're going to be shifting from one culture to another, you know, you want to make sure that nobody's losing in this. And that's what I see as being the most important thing. With some of the restaurants, it seems that they're jumping in, you know, head first and just saying, we'll see what happens. Mm. Other people are being, you know, very, very careful about it. And I think it's going to take that shrewd person to be very careful about it. And you're going to lose your staff at the end of the day.
Pascal, Emmanuel, we have to say goodbye. Gorby, we have to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
No, thank you.
You're welcome. A fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, a columnist at The Week. And again, we saw his column, Tipping is Awesome. Trust me, I'm French. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. We've got a bunch of people that want to join us at 1-888-477-9499. We're talking about the pros and cons of tipping in restaurants. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are jumping headfirst into the debate over tipping in restaurants. What does it mean for the restaurant workers who work in the front and the back of the house? And what does it mean for customers? And frankly, what does it mean for owners as well? Paul O'Neill, Director of Special Projects at Drexel University Center for Hospitality, spent over 20 years, or he has over 20 years of restaurant experience. Avram Hornick, owner of FCM Hospitality, and that includes William Street Common in West Philadelphia. They have a no tipping policy. Everyone's paid $15 an hour. He also owns Morgan's Pier, Drinker's Pub, Drinker's Tavern, Ortlieb's Lounge, and Dolphin Tavern. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. And we want to know what you think about tipping or perhaps even getting rid of the tipping policy. We've got Drew from University City. Drew, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
The way I see it, I think it is a lose-lose on both sides, and here's why. I worked in the restaurant business all the way through college. There were nights where I would work 4 hours, and after that 4 hours, I would walk home with $300 in cash. I think paying wait staff $15 an hour actually decreases their pay while increasing the cost of the restaurant owners. And for me, working through restaurants, bartending, doing all of that was the only way that I could afford to actually pay for college out of pocket. And I think, although it sounds good saying that we're going to pay more at $15 an hour, I think the waitstaff is going to make less.
Well, that's interesting, Drew. Let me toss that to Avram, which is, do people end up making less money if they're paid $15 an hour?
Yes and no. The people in the restaurant business are some of the best people around because they tend to attract people who I call like experience seekers. Mm-hmm. They're also the people who like to, you know, gamble and stay mm-hmm. out late. But you know, the whole idea of gambling is when you play roulette, you remember all the times you've won and you forget about all the times you lost. And so there's a certain about of irrationality involved in the restaurant business, which is you remember your $300 nights,
right,
but you forget all the times you walk with $20 on a Tuesday. So, you know, if you look at the management's job is a well-run place knows how much each server or bartender can handle per hour, like what the volume of sales, whether it be $100 or $200 or $150, and they're going to adjust the schedule over time to make sure that the staff they have on is for that. So that if you look at the statistics, you know, people are paying $20 an hour. Plus, they have to tip out 25%, so they're really taking home $15 an hour at the end of the day. And the days of a cash house where people walked with cash at the end of the night is kind of over in the days of credit cards.
You agree with that, Paul?
I do. And you know, one of the things that I thought about early on was, you know, this instituting a policy of no tipping automatically takes away my desire to want to work a Friday or a Saturday night now, you know, and it makes me want to work the Tuesday night. Exactly. So I'd rather be paid the same. So how are these restaurants going? Sure, it's worked out, you know, an ideal situation for everybody, but it's something that's on the table to be discussed. I mean, you want to pick up an extra shift. And now you're talking about overtime as well.
Right,
so do
right.
I want to pick up the Friday shift now? And now I'm creeping into overtime. Am I allowed to pick up extra shifts? And that's an interesting, you know, perspective there.
Let me read an email from John. He says, the difference between the front of the house and the back of the house is the front of the house deals with the public. And I think what you're saying there,
right,
Paul, is that, you know, there are certain kind of people skills that perhaps should be rewarded.
Absolutely. And you know, as we mentioned before about the fact, you know, having great service versus mediocre food, you know, there is that conversation. And I never want to delve into the conversation of who should be paid more, back of house and front of house. And personally, I think, you know, trying to justify, you know, making sure that the back of house, that's why we're eliminating tipping, so we can bring up the wages of the back of house. I have no interest in that. As a front of house server, even with that perspective, just pay them more if that's the case. You know, that has nothing to do with my salary and what I'm getting for the great service that I provide.
Yeah, you're nodding your head.
I agree. I mean, the question is, can it be a commission-based thing?
Mm-hmm.
So that, yes, so we're collecting, you know, 20%, and whoever works on a Saturday night is getting their share of that. Is there a way to essentially devise a point system or a formula which isn't based on the discretion of the customer? And it really is a fundamental question, is who should be paying your front-of-the-house employees,
right,
the customer or the employer?
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, tipped employees at the hair salons and a few other businesses, but this is one of the few ones where the patron is paying the employee rather than the employer paying the employee.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes it kind of a strange relationship.
You also mentioned we were talking about Title IX and some of the West Coast culture of how California and Oregon and how they're trying to distribute a lot of that. Of course, I'm unfortunately not as familiar with a lot of it, but you have this whole policy of shared tipping throughout the whole restaurant.
The tip pool.
Right.
And so the laws, I mean, a lot of, I think you were saying, like Advetri, they have a tip pool based on a point system.
Right.
And a lot of, you know, bars often do it, which means that all the tips get put into one big bucket and they get divided up amongst the staff.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is if you take the tip credit, meaning that you don't pay your employees a full minimum wage, but
right,
you allow some of the tips to pay for that, only front of the house employees can take that.
Right.
In the Ninth Circuit, which is still under appeal,
all
of those California, Nevada, Oregon, Washington, Montana, they changed their state laws to require all employees to receive the minimum wage. There's no smaller
like
wage.
Like the minimum wage, not the restaurant.
The state minimum wage,
gotcha,
right? Mm-hmm. There's no lower minimum wage. But as a result, they also changed the law, which says if you don't take the tip credit, then you could share the tip pool with dishwashers and cooks and other people in the restaurant. But honestly, like, you think about like the cocktail culture today. Like the amount of work that they go into make these wonderful cocktails, which I enjoy, everyone enjoys.
Mm-hmm.
How is that different from someone making a sandwich? Like really,
in the back of the house.
In the back of the house. Like right, why is right, that person entitled to tips and the guy making a sandwich or making your meat plate not?
Right.
And so the kind of as hospitality has changed, as you said, it has become more casual, that the concepts have evolved, the lines become blurry.
Let me get back to our callers. Looks like we have Laura from Doylestown joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Laura. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Just want to say that this is an issue as a diner that's really important to me. I absolutely loathe tipping. It's this moment after a nice meal when I have to make an employee evaluation decision that really has nothing to do with me. So it's this little annoying, irritated moment at the end of a nice meal. And I feel like the management, the owner, should be monitoring their own staff and making decisions about whether they're performing well or not. And I'm coming back to the restaurant based on the totality of my experience. I've traveled a lot in Europe and in Asia where you don't have to tip, and it just is such a nice, pleasant experience not to have to deal with evaluating an employee at the end of a nice meal.
Well, Laura, you got some knowing chuckles from our guest. Paul, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, for some it can be an awkward transaction, most definitely. You know, and especially after you're enjoying yourself, and now, you know, some people get very apprehensive when they have to start performing any type of math problem, whether it be the most basic arithmetic, and you see the cell phones come out. They've had,
doing the multiplication.
I remember when cell phones, you know, were coming out with already the tip calculator in addition to the calculator. So, you know, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
And you've had some wine. You've had all this, and now you have to think, oh my goodness, I don't even know if these numbers are real. I don't know what I'm doing. So there is that awkward transaction. And you know, just like Laura said, it's the last thing that she wants to do is have to be the one to make that call.
And do you think part of the problem is that people don't know exactly what the criteria is?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I always think of 20%. I mean, to me, I think that's good service. That's a good night. Now, maybe I'm off base here. I don't know.
I think the caller makes a wonderful point, because you see, like, one of my favorite things to observe is you see, like, a young couple out on a date, like a first date, and they're splitting the check, and they each have to put a tip on the and they're saying, yeah, who's going to tip more, well, and am I doing the right thing?
Yeah.
And they're going back and forth. And that just adds a level of, as the caller said, like, it's socially awkward. It breaks the mood. And we really, as you know, the owners and managers of hospitality locations, do we really want to do that to our customers? Is that in their best interest? Is it in our best interest? And do we want the people who tip the best to get the best service?
Hmm.
Is that fair? Like, the people will have the most money, isn't it? You know, don't wealthy people in our country have enough privileges without actually, you know, the people who are, it's their anniversary and they're taking a stretch to go out to a nice restaurant versus the people who go every day? Like, why should the people who are there to stretch, why should their money not be as valuable? In fact, they should be treated better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the tipping kind of creates that disincentive for good hospitality.
Paul, do you think that actually the question went right out of my head. So it'll come back to me.
I'll be here for a little bit.
I forgot to scribble it down. Let me get, looks like Dan from Center City, Philadelphia to join us. Dan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, Marty. I was going to ask you a question about the concept of invisible service, but now that going out to eat's a social issue, I think I might want to comment on that instead. I don't think it's necessary that people who tip the most get the best service, but if you're a regular customer, you might get better service just because you're a regular customer and people recognize you. I go to Osteria and Anise, and I don't know, maybe it's the computer, but when I come in, they treat me like a king. You know? You go to other places, you walk in the door, and they just ignore you.
Well,
better service gets better tip in general.
So you're saying, Dan, when you go to places where you're treated, as you say, like a king, you're more likely to tip the server better?
I tip anyway, Marty. Like yourself, I came out of Jack's Firehouse years ago. I was a manager, and I tip no matter where I go. My rule is 20% no matter what. If it's exceptional, 25 to 30%. If I'm really unhappy, I'll still give the waiter or waitress 20% and just either tell management on my way out or not go back to the restaurant.
Interesting.
I'm not a big one for a lot of attention. I just want my water glass filled, my food to arrive hot, and I'm happy. And I don't want the waiter to insert himself into my meal. I have a family. I'm there to enjoy my family, not my waiter.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting, Dan.
I would say that both Anise and Osteria are exceptional for service.
Well,
they're two of my favorite restaurants.
Well, it's good to know, and there are a lot of great restaurants in Philadelphia, which is a wonderful thing, I think, for all of us. But that's an interesting, which is, again, the sort of etiquette, which is how you know, some people, frankly, are overly friendly. What can I say, Paul?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. Dan's definitely going to get even better service now at Amisa Nosuria.
Since he mentioned it several times on the air, right?
Number one, there's many different ways that that restaurants can provide better hospitality. And, you know, they know when Dan is coming in, when he makes that reservation through OpenTable or whatever reservation system. So
people know if you've come back, right?
Absolutely. And a secondary function of OpenTable is the fact that you can maintain this kind of dossier on your guests, where what are preferences, birthdays, special dates, et cetera. So that in and of itself is already starting that better hospitality before the guests even arrive. You're anticipating all of those elements. But another thing is, you know, being treated like a king. You want to maintain a cap on that. So a few years ago,
too kingly.
Yeah, you don't want to throw all the bells and whistles. A few years ago, when Pete Wells, the New York Times restaurant critic, went to Danielle, he knocked off a star. It started off great. The food was amazing. He had the most amazing experience. What he did is he had one of his friends have a table on the other side of the restaurant the same night. And, you know, the disparity between the two, it was really interesting. They knew who he was going in. So we would always have kind of the policy is treat everybody as if they're a Craig LeBan or as if they're a James Beard diner or whatever the case may be. And if you're going to give one thing to one table, guess what? Everybody has to get it. You can't go above and beyond too much.
We have an email from Nancy. Let me give this to you, Avram. What about a guaranteed 40-hour work week for waiters and bartenders? What about health care coverage? I mean, once you open the door to this stuff, right, then you have to deal with it.
And that's a serious problem. The statistics, that I read, you know, since I was coming here, said that about 80% or 90% of tipped employees work under 30 hours a week. So the threshold for the new health law is 30 hours. If you're under 30 hours, you're considered a part-time. You don't qualify for health insurance. So that, I think that's a serious problem. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to get 40 hours in a restaurant because shifts tend to be shorter. There aren't that many busy days. You know, Sunday, right. Monday, Tuesday, you're really not going to need your full staff. But on Saturday, you are. So having a position where you can actually have 40 hours is not easy to do. But I just wanted to also respond to the concept of guest value,
yes.
and guest experience, that there's a lot of different ways to maximize guest value. And I think that Philadelphia has some of the best hospitality, but also a lot of the organizations, the Vetri organization, big prominent, as well as, you know, Kate and Rich from the Veg organization, you know, John, you know, the Tria. Like, but what they've done is they've taken our BYO culture, which has the best service, right? When the owner is there and they're on the floor, they're taking care of you, they know who you are, they don't need a computer system, they don't have any of that. That's a wonderful level of service. But then these organizations have been able to take that level of intimacy and emotional intelligence about their guests and then apply it to a multi-location format. And that is a level of operational excellence which is so difficult to achieve.
And we're almost out of time here, Paul. I mean, do you see this as the beginning of a trend, or is it just too soon to tell whether we're going to be seeing many more restaurants where they don't have tipping?
I do see it as a trend. As much resistance or as much as acceptance there may be, but I don't foresee it to be. This is a change in culture. It's you have to plant the seed, and it has to take off, and there has to be a lot of data that comes out of this. I think, you know, to mention once again with Danny Meyer's restaurant organization or, you know, his hospitality group taking over this, he's able to. He has 13 restaurants in a little town called New York. And he's, you know, he may have started something here.
Well, stay tuned, right?
That's it.
Paul O'Neill, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times, Director of Special Projects at Drexel University Center for Hospitality. Avram Hornick, thank you for joining us as well. He's owner of FCM Hospitality, which does include William Street Common in West Philadelphia. And they just, about a year ago, instituted a no-tipping policy and, again, paying all their employees $15 an hour. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can find out much more about the program, including how to download podcasts of the show. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And we did post some photos of our guests. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.